have an army. We have a Hulk.
Welcome to episode 148 of We Have a Hulk podcast, where we talk all things film and TV. I'm one half the podcast, Nicola.
And I'm co-pilot Chris.
And what are we going to be talking about in this week's episode then, Chris?
Right, we've got Home of the Hulks, Nicola, where we'll be talking about what we've been watching, doing and reading since our last episode. And we've got a review of No Time to Die.
Ooh, the latest Bond. Finally. I didn't think it was going to happen until we actually sat there and the credits came on. Yeah. Like, it's starting. It's happening. Yeah. Okay, so let's kick things off with At Home with the Hulk. What have you been watching, reading, and doing the past couple of weeks, then, Chris?
Right, Nicola, it's been quite a few things since our last one.
Yeah.
British TV, yes. Got here. Vigil.
I thought it was very gripping and I really enjoyed it, actually.
Yeah, interesting. Yeah, it's a very British drama, which isn't usually my thing.
Your cup of tea.
You know, because due to acting choices and editing and stuff.
Ooh.
But this was interesting due to the nuclear submarine angle, I felt. It did hold my attention, but I felt the ending was a bit...
Yeah. It was a bit weak, wasn't it? Yeah, I was quite disappointed. Like, the whole thing about it was that it was, like, no tension, and it was, like, a thriller, and you were trying to work out who it was. Yeah, I know what you mean. It was quite sweet, though, I think. The ending in a way.
I'm not sure sweet was what I was hoping for from the ending. And, you know, nuclear missiles and stuff.
I don't know.
That would never happen in a British drama, would it?
No.
Yeah, so that was that.
Mm-hmm.
Strictly Come Dancing back.
Yay! It's the best time of the year. Yeah,
well, so that means it's basically Christmas, right?
Well, we got autumn first, we got Halloween, and then true, obviously Bonfire Night.
It's kind of like certain things
the
come
lead
out
up
TV,
to,
don't
yeah.
It kind of feels like it's all kicking off.
But I do love this because, as you said, Strictly is back, Bake Off is back. They're two of my favourite programmes because I am 80 years old.
Go on then, Bake Off.
Bake
the next
Off.
One
yes. I don't know if I'm liking this year's Bake Off so far.
Yeah, I don't
It's just getting a bit cringy. And I hate saying that because it makes me so sad because, as I said, this is one of my favourite shows. But I don't know whether Matt Lucas is...
Yeah, I wanted to give him the benefit of the chance last season, but I just don't feel like he...
Oh, how it opened on that terrible, like, miming of
that was awful.
The song, you know.
And some of the jokes as well. It's not like even the people in the tent are laughing, you know.
Yeah, it's just like,
it's really
tumbleweeds.
Awkward.
Yeah. But who are your favourites so far?
Oh, I like Geronimo. Is it Geronimo? No. I like the German guy.
Jürgen.
Jürgen.
I'm going to say it's Jürgen.
I like how no one ever answers the phone.
Oh, that's so sad, isn't it?
It's horrible.
This time when he won, I was like, come on, someone answer, and they did. Oh, yay!
We don't have phones in my house. We're too poor. Yeah, it's cool. Yeah, I like it. I think it's okay. There's a few characters in there which are a bit...
Giuseppe's good. Right? The Italian baker. I think it's going to be down to German efficiency versus Italian flair. Potentially.
Yeah, I can see that. Yeah.
But yes, the Liverpudlian lady's a little bit irritating, isn't she? No, I didn't practice. I watched Harry Potter. Oh, right. Okay.
Sure.
Well done.
You should win this then, hey. Yeah. Yeah, so that's all the British TV, really. Should we go on to...
Pretty much.
Why the Last Man?
Yeah. So this is a Disney Plus / FX sort of in the Americas. In America, based on the graphic novel. What do you think of this?
The same name. Yeah, I really like the concept. We've seen 6 episodes,
uh-huh.
And not a lot has happened yet. It's fairly slight. It is sort of interesting. Get some other characters and stuff. But I'm just a little concerned that it's going to end up one of these shows where they're not really focusing on what's happening as much as just kind of giving you a character-based thing. I feel like a story, some sort of plot, some sort of progression is important to me, and I feel like it's going to end up a bit like Walking Dead, where it doesn't really feel like anything is actually ever progressing. It's just sort of
drama-lana.
Perpetually the same stuff and just meeting new characters and things, which isn't necessarily my thing. So we'll see. I'm hoping that some cool stuff will happen. There'll be some reveals and things. Maybe the world will change a bit and we'll start to see some more dissent and stuff. And it could be interesting, but I'm not 100% sold so far, is what I'm saying.
I agree with you on that point. Yeah, it's just not really progressing as I thought it would. It's really taking its time. There's deliberate pacing there. It could be focusing on more interesting things, or is it very political, very, as you say, character-driven, very drama-y? I want to see some bigger things from it, but we'll see.
Yeah, I mean, maybe we've got to talk about geneticists and things, right? So I'm hoping you're going to give us some interesting answers and stuff.
Yes.
But we'll see. We'll see.
I like the whole agent thing as well. I think that storyline's really interesting.
Yeah.
Maybe if I sort of explore that a bit more too.
It's going that way. So, I'm hoping.
It's promising.
It's promising. Star Wars Visions.
Oh, yes. You didn't watch this.
I haven't seen it.
You do not like animation.
Well, I do feel animation like this snob. Is...
Just saying you're a bit of an animation snob.
I am, for sure.
Self-confessed,
yes. I do feel like this is probably one of the more interesting things that's come out of Star Wars since, like, the 70s.
Oh.
The 80s, maybe. No, it's just because Star Wars... A lot of it just feels very samey to me now, and even the movies and stuff, they seem to be just kind of trying to draw on that nostalgia of the original movies and not really doing anything too much new. So I thought this seemed almost a bit like the Animatrix or something, where it's showing you some different styles, different ideas, maybe? I haven't seen it.
You haven't seen it, Chris. So... I haven't seen it. But yes, you're sort of gathering the right sort of...
Okay,
on the right path.
Good.
It's like an anthology, sort of like What If, but... Instead of What If, there's a different animation studio behind each episode. Okay. And it's very standalone, explores different concepts throughout it. I love the different animation styles. They're great. Opens with a sort of Seven Samurai type deal episode, which is a great opening. Some of my other favourites are like the twins, which is really cool. There's like, you know, duality in Star Wars is quite a big thing.
Yep.
Whereas that, they really explore it a lot more. And obviously twins, one's sort of evil, one's good, and they have this giant like lightsaber battle. It's great. And then you got the Ninth Jedi, which is intriguing, and I just think it's very bold and fresh and something they haven't done very much in Star Wars recently.
I think that's good that they're kind of testing these ideas and seeing what people think, and hopefully it'll be well received.
I think Star Wars has excelled more in the animated series lately, because obviously you had Bad Batch, Rebels, Clone Wars. They're all very much beloved properties. Mm. So maybe they should go down that route in the future.
Yeah,
I don't know.
Liked Bad Batch to start with, but it just got a bit.
Something of the week style.
Yeah, I didn't really feel like big enough. I don't know, maybe something.
Okay.
Sex Education Season 3?
Yeah! Oh, this is good. So much good fun. I do love Sex Education. That's really good as well.
Something I haven't seen.
Yes. It's explored an interesting number of topics in this series. And obviously, Gillian Anderson was my favourite because she's amazing. And it's definitely setting things up for a fourth season, which has been confirmed. And it'll be intriguing to see how they go from there, because there's a significant sort of conclusion with a character going off somewhere else. Cliffhanger! What's going to happen?
Cool. We got Metal Shop Masters.
Yeah.
So this is a Netflix thing where they basically, it's like a competition to see who can produce the best metal fabrication kind of pieces.
So it's very much like the glass blowing one we really like.
Yes.
But if you want to compare it to like a British show, they have, you know, they're like the Sewing Bee.
Yeah.
And then you have like the Reclamation shows where
this is a much more American version or something like that, isn't it?
For sure. Definitely. Yeah. I love that. We're like sewing and upcycling. And they're like metal. Metal work.
There's another one which was knives, wasn't it?
Oh, yes. Weapons. That was pretty cool to be fair.
I think I preferred the glass blowing show. Glass blowing. I think the stakes were a little bit higher in that because there was always the risk that the glass was going to break and stuff. Yeah. And we'd have to start.
There was a lot of tension.
Whereas, it feels like this is more sort of planned out. And I don't know.
I think it has to be a bit more methodical with metal, right?
Yeah, I guess so. Mm-hmm. I guess so. Yeah. It's all right.
But that's on Netflix if you want to check it out too.
Indeed. Midnight Mass.
Oh, yeah. Also on Netflix. So this is, I can't remember the guy's name now. Oh, it's going to annoy me. He obviously did Haunting of Bly Manor, Hill House, I think, is it?
These aren't things that I've watched and probably won't watch because they're a bit too
Also, the Shining spin-off sequel, Dr. Sleep. Mike Flanagan, that's his name. He's like a sort of horror auteur now. I'm surprised you watched this. What did you think, since you are not a horror aficionado?
Well, I kind of let you start this watching. I let you start watching this without me, or you started watching it without me.
Because I didn't think you'd like
no,
it.
No, you didn't. And that was fair, because I sort of watched a little bit of episode two and I was like, oh, that's upsetting, because like, dogs were dying and stuff, weren't they? So I kind of started watching in episode three. I don't know how that happened. I kind of just started watching it with you in episode three. But episode three was actually really, really great. And I'm kind of glad that I didn't watch the first two, because I think I might not have stuck with it had I watched them. So it's kind of this interesting situation that happened there.
Yeah, I mean, I think what he does really well with this, it's definitely different to what he's done previously with the Haunting shows. There is a significant twist.
Yes, and that is changes everything. Three, I think.
Yes.
And that is really what kind of drew me into it and made me much more interested. Yes. I think it's ended up being one of my favourite shows of this year so far.
Wow. It's definitely a lot different to what we... Not spoiling the twist, but the connotations and the sort of portrayal of that significant sort of horror subgenre. Mm. How he's done that is very different to what we've seen before. And that's why I quite enjoyed it. It was interesting. It was a lot about sort of religion tied with that subgenre. And also very much about like sins and tragedy and addiction, and also about this small town and small community which has become more and more fractured as more people leave. And there's loads of monologues too, which seems really weird as well, but somehow it works.
It does sort of remind me of another property that I've watched.
Oh, okay.
TV show. I won't mention it because it will give the game away. But yeah, but I love all the, it's like all the turning this religion into something really sinister and kind of people having the best intentions but ending up going down the whole wrong path, like entirely.
What's that phrase you said? The road to hell is paved with good intentions?
That just sums it up, doesn't it?
It
pretty much sums up the show. And it looks great as well.
Yes.
They've done this thing where it's kind of, it's got all these kind of sepia tones, which makes it look a bit kind of dark and mysterious.
It's very brooding.
But at the same time, it's kind of vibrant in the foreground stuff quite often. They haven't gone down that route of just desaturating everything, which I feel like is the easy option. It doesn't end up looking that great. So, yeah. Color depth of field as well and stuff. It looks good.
It does look very good. There's a really, really important subplot about a Muslim man and his son who've come to the island, and obviously they're sort of not ostracized, but they're not
super included.
Exactly.
Because everyone else is very much part of the church.
Quite insular, aren't they? Yeah. And there's this I can't remember how to pronounce his name, but obviously he's in the Haunting series before this, and also iZombie. I think it is. But yeah, he does this amazing sort of monologue, another monologue, about Muslims and the police and America. And it's really important. But the one thing about it is that I don't really feel like it really fitted in the show.
Interesting. I felt like it was a nice angle to have in there.
It was a really good angle and it was really important. But I don't know whether he quite explored it enough. I don't know.
I don't think it was out of place or anything personally. So, the last one I want to talk about.
Ooh, the big TV, one.
The big one. Foundation.
Yes.
So this is on another level to me.
Okay. Interesting.
I love sci-fi.
Yes.
And you can just tell that like this is high-level production stuff, can't you?
It's big. Money. Apple TV Plus must have the biggest budget.
Yeah, but also just the levels of creativity gone into it and everything as well. Yep. So it's based on a book series of the same name by Isaac Asimov, who...
he's like the granddaddy of sci-fi, right? Hard sci-fi.
A prolific writer, wasn't he? Yes. Like he wrote 500 books or something, you said.
Something bonkers like that.
Which is, assuming he wrote for like 50 years, that'd be 10 books a year. How do you do that?
No idea. And he also was instrumental in the whole three laws of AI, right?
That's right, yeah. Father of robotics or something, wasn't he, I think? Mm-hmm. There were some liberties taken in the show, like Empire wasn't in the books, is that right?
No, I don't think so.
That's interesting. I want to read the books.
That's like one of the best bits of it for me. I mean, I'm astounded whoever came up with that.
It's great. It's very cool. Very cool. It's stunning. Great concepts and visuals. I really love it. And I think we've seen the whole season now.
Yes.
which is kind of upsetting. But I know. I'm really looking forward to more.
It clearly sets up, I'm pretty sure the creator has said he wants to do like 10 series or something. Series. And I'm like, I can see that. But yeah, that's a lot of series.
There should be enough book, right?
Yeah, for sure.
That? I mean, how many books are in the
Foundation?
I
think there's 3 books, and then there's like a couple of spin-offs as well, and then like an interconnecting universe.
I wonder if you can make the subject matter span out that long, then no. But if it gets to the point where they have to start making up their own stuff, I think that's usually when shows fall apart. And they don't usually make it past like 7 seasons or something about falling apart. Yeah.
Well, so. I think they've just done amazingly, because this has been considered an unfilmable and unadaptable property, right? And the way that they pulled it off, as well as sort of breathing new life into it, as you said, with the clones.
Empire.
Yeah. Also, they changed the gender of a lot of characters as well, which is interesting, because there were hardly any women in there, which I appreciate. Thank you very much for that.
Up to date a bit, sure.
Yeah, and it's just weird how some of the stories feel still so relevant today, like the thing about climate change and climate deniers. And exactly.
Climate change.
And yeah, and as you said, it just looks phenomenal. It rivals Dune, I would say.
I was going to say, yeah, it's kind of on that same kind of literary level.
Yes.
Perhaps as Dune, not that I've read either. So, but it looks, the world building looks very kind of similar and stuff. Cool.
But saying that, I have to say, caveat that with it's very hard sci-fi. It's very confusing at times, the timelines and things.
Like, I'm still confused about who some of the people are and what's
exactly.
going on.
Exactly. So. And this isn't for the faint-hearted, but it isn't for those who want everything
and laid out for you. Yeah, it doesn't wait for you to catch up.
Exactly.
It just lays it all out there, and you have to keep up with
it. You have to piece together the mystery and stuff.
I like that about it. It's not dumbing it down or anything.
And there's lots of twists and turns, which is great.
Definitely excited for more of that. Right, let's talk about some film, shall we?
Yeah, okay.
So, Bond, obviously. We'll talk about that later. Ooh. It's not going to do that too much. Cop Shop.
Mm-hmm.
This is the Jerry Butler's one.
Gerard Butler, and Frank Grillo. I can't remember the lady's name. I need to get IMDb up, but she was the best thing about this film. I'm sorry. She was fantastic. What did you think of Cop Shop? I got to caveat this with, at one point, Chris turned around to me and said, "Well, this is shit," like halfway through the film.
I was asking you a question. I was like, "This is shit, right? Should we go?" I was hoping you were going to say yes, to be honest. Yeah, I found this film so tedious at the start.
For the first hour or so,
I was just like, I don't know, I just felt it was beating around the bush. It could have got where it was going much quicker, I felt. Felt to me like it was trying to be too Tarantino or something. Like
I was going to say it was very sort of...
But it just wasn't working for me.
But you're not a huge fan of Tarantino anyway, which is why I was sitting there and thinking, this isn't for Chris.
I just felt like it felt a bit pretentious, like it was trying to do something that it couldn't live up to. Strange choices in terms of music and stuff for me as well. Like it felt like it was going for a old school detective noir almost style angle on the music, but that is definitely not what the film was at all, I don't think. So it didn't really work for me there. Once the action picked up, I got into it. It was quite good after that. But I just feel like it took a long time to get there. There was some terrible dialogue and stuff.
It wasn't a great film,
if I'm being honest. But yeah, the action was good. And then who are we actually supposed to be rooting for? Because at the end, I was just a bit confused about what I'd watched, to be honest with you. But yeah, that's my feelings. What about you? Just going to leave that.
A bit of a journey, huh? Okay, interesting. I really enjoyed this. I enjoyed the aesthetics. I know what you mean about the dialogue, but I kind of appreciate
it. It was a very eclectic collection of styles.
Yes.
And I think maybe some people will enjoy that and some people will not.
It felt very much like a 90s cop thriller. And if you're not a huge fan of that, I can understand why you don't like it. It was a lot of talking and a lot of who is the good person here, and you're trying to work out whose side they're on, and there's lots of
I could tell that's what it was supposed to be trying to do, but it just didn't really click for me. It felt boring. Like, kind of go with it.
Okay.
I don't know. That's just me.
Interesting. Just me. I love the action anyway. I thought it was fantastic when it kicked in. I enjoyed it on the whole.
There's a couple of good characters in there as well. Yes. Quite fun. Won't spoil it, but okay, let's leave that there, shall we? Green Knight.
Ooh.
This was another one that was kind of didn't quite work for me. Visually very interesting. Felt like they were trying to do something quite metaphorical in there.
I don't know if I appreciated that. Can I just caveat this before you say anything else? With this has been out in America for a long time now. It's finally come to Amazon Prime in the UK. Obviously, film critics and film Twitter creamed themselves over this film.
Yeah.
I'm going to put it out there. Sorry, it's true. They really hyped it up. But when I watched it, I was like, okay, Dev Patel is hot. I would agree with you in this because they were like, it's Dev Patel summer in this film. But other than that, I mean, it looks great, but I just feel like, you know, when something's hyped up and then it doesn't quite live up to your expectations.
Yeah, it felt pretentious to me. Like it was trying to say something, but it wasn't quite sure what it was trying to say, but it wanted you to think that it had something to say, you know? And I mean, I don't know why he accepted that challenge at the start. It's just like, why would you accept that challenge? It seems like such a dumb thing to do because it's going to come back and bite you, surely.
Well, there was some interesting subtext about like Christian and paganism and stuff. Like, obviously you had the dying Arthur and his legend, didn't you? And that's very Christian. And we had the Green Knight's mother and she was like into magic and things. And
so it was like a transitional period, maybe between a couple of different
ideologies. And then it was about sort of like legend and getting your own legend and him trying to become a knight and live up to these Arthurian legends and things.
A little bit of if you saw what your future entailed, would you still do it kind of thing. Sort of insinuated at the end. Yeah, I don't know. It just left me feeling a bit deflated, to be honest.
Yeah. The thing was, he wasn't knighted yet, right? And you have to sort of go on quests and things to become a knight. And his mother was trying to sort of thrust him into it because he was a bit, he was happy to just bum around really and not do much and things.
That was like his dream, wasn't it?
Yeah, but he wasn't doing anything about it. But yeah, I know what you mean. I think, it's a tricky one, isn't it? I mean, it looks fantastic and I love the fox and there's big giants and things. But I was thinking it was going to be like an epic sort of fantasy with swords and quests and things like that, and it was just weird.
Let's move on, shall we?
Yeah.
The Guilty.
So this is out on Netflix now.
Yeah. This is quite different in terms of it's quite a small film, really. It doesn't really go.
It's like a chamber piece, as they call it.
Okay. Yeah, it's very much in one room, really.
Mm-hmm.
It's Jake Gyllenhaal, and he's excellent. He's such a great actor, and he's incredible. His performance.
He carries it all. It's pretty much all character led from him, right? It's
like 99% of the film. It's a great story about someone who's kind of messed up but maybe won't accept they've done wrong, and then something kind of happens to them and it forces them to kind of change their views and stuff, maybe.
And confront what they've done
and
who they are and who they've become.
And sort of find some self-awareness, maybe.
Yes.
Understand themselves.
And maybe everything isn't as clear-cut as you might think, right?
Right, yeah. Don't just judge a book by its cover. Like, you have to understand what's going on. Yeah, very cleverly done. Lots of suspense.
Yes.
A couple of unexpected things happened.
Twists and turnies.
Twisty turnies. Yeah, it's a great one. Would really recommend this.
Yes. Also, interestingly enough, it's actually based on a... It's only been remade in the past couple of years. Because was it a Polish film? It was a European film anyway, and they've been obviously adapted it to an American audience. And it'll be intriguing to see the original, because I know it was really highly rated.
Cool. Talk about The Starling.
Yes, this is another Netflix one.
Yes, so Melissa McCarthy and Chris O'Dowd.
Yes.
Story about mental health and relationships and stuff after losing a child.
Yes. It's, it was quite, quite dark.
Quite dark subject
matter. Quite
deep. But it was ultimately quite heartwarming, I felt.
Yeah.
And, just about them struggling to come to terms with what's happened and what they really want from their lives.
Yeah.
Whether they still want to be together and that sort of thing. Yeah. So, yeah, I enjoyed it.
I think Melissa McCarthy was afforded a lot more depth to the role that she has been previously.
Yeah.
I do, obviously, I love her in comedy and she's fantastic in Spy. It's one of my favourite films. It's a good sort of comedy relief film if you want.
Yeah.
Cheering up, right?
Yeah, for sure.
But here it is really interesting to see her delve into something a little bit more with a bit more substance.
I agree.
And I think she does it really well. And also in Nine Perfect Strangers, she's great in that too.
So this hasn't done very well, right? Or...
No, everyone hates it.
Really?
Yeah, okay. I'm saying everyone, critics, which surprised me. I don't know why they hate it so much.
Have you read any reviews or anything?
Well, I've sort of read initial reactions.
Okay.
And I was like, oh, sort of thing. I just don't understand.
Okay, well. You know, I enjoyed it, although it was right. Yep. It's not the best film in the world, but it was good. The Rescue.
Yes.
This was the documentary about the boys that got stranded in that cave.
Mm-hmm.
In Thailand,
yeah.
Edgy of seat stuff, I suppose, wasn't it?
Definitely, yes.
I do feel like it kind of maybe played on that a little bit.
For sure. I mean, it really dragged it out, didn't it? Let's be honest.
Like, I need to know what happened. Yeah. But it's an incredible story of like the grit and determination of these people that were trying to find these boys. And
yeah.
They didn't give up, and it paid off, you know? And just the, like, how they actually recovered them in the end, I had no idea the lengths they went to get them out of there. But it's amazing that they all survived.
Mm.
So, yeah, it's amazing, incredibly shocking.
Feat of human ingenuity.
Yes.
And determination. And grit and will.
Grit and will.
Yes. But it's really nice how they go into the stories, like the backstories of the cave divers and stuff.
Yeah.
And one of them, their dad was saying, why have you got this silly hobby that it's never going to get you anywhere? And he saved the lives of these people. And it was really, really great.
Very, very good. Encounter?
Yes. And this is another TIFF film. Riz Ahmed starred in it. And he's been doing some really great stuff lately. What did you think about this one?
Yeah, I thought it was decent enough. Decent film.
Yes. It was a tale of two halves, shall we say.
Yeah, and that's my issue with it, really.
Yeah.
Riz Ahmed and the kids were great.
Yeah.
I thought the kids were brilliant, actually.
You need to watch Sound of Metal. He's so good in that.
Okay.
It's another sort of a bit depressing, but good.
So the whole issue, you've already alluded to it, but I thought I was going in for one thing and ended up getting something else.
Mm-hmm.
And... I feel like that happens sometimes in like certain M. Night Shyamalan films.
Yeah, for sure.
I kind of expect one thing and get another, which is fine, as long as it's kind of that kind of idea of over-promise and under-promise, over-deliver, right? That's what you have to do.
Okay, yeah. Not the other way around.
Right, exactly. But if you kind of promise one thing, then the outcome has to be at least as good as you expect or better, right? Because otherwise... you go down a step and it's like, yeah. So I really like the concept that I was kind of given to start with, and I'm a big sci-fi fan and everything. I'm kind of giving this away a little bit, but it kind of goes down a different route, and it was a good film, but I was just a little bit disappointed that it wasn't what it kind of initially kind of promised.
I think that's very valid.
And it might be.
I don't really want to say too much more, if I'm honest.
Yeah.
But yeah, sci-fi into family drama, it's a strange bag, isn't it, really?
Yeah, I mean, it was interesting, all the PTSD and the kind of mental break and stuff. It's certainly very important subject matter.
Quite topical.
But it's just the way it was presented didn't quite work for me, so.
Yeah.
We watched Shang-Chi again.
Yeah.
Bloody brilliant.
It's such a good film.
Malignant.
Oh, Malignant.
I didn't watch this one.
I love this film. You need to watch this film. It's hilarious. Like, you think it's going to be one thing.
It's not scary.
Oh, boy. No, it's not scary. Okay. Well, it's kind of like the first third, it's a little bit scary because there's this like person haunting someone and they keep seeing murders happen and stuff. Yeah. And it's a little bit gory. But gory's not as bad as scary, right?
No, I don't like gory.
No. And then, oh my gosh, it hits the fan. Things change and it just gets bonkers. Like, I haven't seen anything this crazy in a long time and I absolutely loved it. I mean, it can go... I feel like it's going to be quite Marmite-y, and it definitely has been. If you don't know what the hell is going to happen, then you could rightly so be like, well, I didn't pay for this craziness.
Okay.
Sure. But I loved it. So much fun.
Cool. All right. That's it for films. You've also been reading Dune.
Dune.
What is it?
I think it's Dune, right?
Dune, but then that sounds like the month. But it also sounds like sand dune. It makes sense. There's lots of sand in it.
Okay. I have just finished book two of Dune. Yes. Okay. I am just about to book three of Dune in
the
one.
The last one?
No, because there's a couple of more spin-offs and things. Yes, I'm very much enjoying it. You can see the influence in like Star Wars and all the other sort of epic sci-fis that have come after it. And it's such a seminal book. It's quite dense, but I enjoy that. And it's obviously very good at world building. We love this phrase, don't we? World building.
They certainly think quite a lot, don't
they? Yes. But it does it so well. And yeah, there's just some interesting. I'll be intrigued to see what you think of the film, because that's just book one.
Okay. So let's go on to doing, shall we?
Very quickly.
Yeah, we'll run through this quickly. So we've been continuing our D&D campaign.
Mm-hmm, yeah.
So this is with Nate Nurchat and his other half Rebecca and the Geekstalkers.
Mm-hmm.
And we just hit level 3.
Oh,
which
very
is exciting,
exciting
because
yeah.
I get magic and some level 2 spells. So that's cool. I also painted a figure of my character called Sebastian Skillsmith. See on Instagram if you want to go check him out.
Plug, plug, plug.
Yeah, which brings me on to something else I've been doing, which is painting miniatures.
Aww.
So I haven't done this since I collected Warhammer like 20 years ago or something.
Dang. You old.
I'm old. And yeah, I'm finding it really... just really relaxing. I'm loving it. It's good. So I've painted a Warhammer Necron so far. Grick. Grick is a creature that we met in our D&D campaign. It's like a big worm thing with a beak. And yeah, my sorcerer character. So you can check those out on at Copilot Chris if you want to see what they look like. What else have we been up to?
You just got some owlbears, right?
Yeah, I just got my owlbears. I've also got a Mad Moxie from Borderlands. So I'm going to paint those. It's exciting. Crazy Golf at Swingers West End.
Didn't sound much Crazy Golf lately.
Yeah,
I don't know. Maybe pro soon.
Pro Crazy Golfers. Yeah, it was fun. That was before we went to the musical Back to the Future, I believe.
Yeah, what did you think of Back to the Future?
It was good. There was a lot of music and stuff in there that I didn't recognise and things. Yes. There was a lot of scenes that felt forced, like,
yeah,
dropped in there.
Like, how can we fit a song in here?
Yeah,
I don't know. Let's just put it anyway.
Like, yeah. But I did enjoy it overall. It was good. And seeing like the...
oh my gosh, the DeLorean.
And the sea dance.
Oh, yes. Was that great. Was great too. Yeah. Yeah. I mean, if you're a big fan of Back to the Future,
yeah,
you're going to like this, right? Been
having a little poke around.
For sure.
What else? Why the Last Man Experience.
Yeah.
So this was put on to as a screening, basically, but they added some experience stuff where you can walk around and...
like an immersive experience.
Yeah, and feel like you're in the world and see, like, the control room where they're sorting out. Control room? Like, the president's area, and then they had, like, some of the more religious stuff going on and mm-hmm. things. It's kind of interesting. I'm amazed that they put in that much work to an experience, considering that it's just for a very limited...
It wasn't open to the experience, which is weird, because
yeah,
they've done this before, well, not Disney, but like Warner Brothers have done this before for like It Chapter 2, when they had the sort of scary
yeah.
experience. You went in and got chased by like clowns and things.
But yeah, this one was really limited as far as I know. It's just yeah. for the people that are going to see the screening, so which they just screened the first episode, which was good.
But yeah, we had some amazing cocktails.
Yeah.
On a school night. Ooh.
Yeah, mojito in the
best mojito I've ever had.
That was tasty mojito.
Oh, so good. Normally I don't like mojitos, but that one. Oh yes. Oh boy.
Oh boy. You also covered Tiff a little bit.
Did, yes.
Yes.
It was good. Really good. I do need to catch up my reviews. I just need like a solid week off just to write reviews, I think.
So that's Toronto Film Festival.
Yes,
right?
Toronto International Film Festival. Unfortunately, obviously a lot of the films weren't available online, but I saw some of the big ones too. As you said, The Guilty was probably one of my favourites. The Rescue was also fantastic. Stunning was interesting. And there were a couple more that I also watched.
Cool.
Mm-hmm.
All right, that's everything.
And I've got London Film Festival coming up soon, so wait for that coming.
And we'll talk about that in the next one, probably.
Yes, I'm going to see One Eye and Soho. I'm so excited. I do like red quite.
Cool.
Mm-hmm.
All right, let's go into our review, shall we?
Mr. Bond.
I need a favor, brother. You're the only one I trust for this.
The world's moved on, Commander Bond.
You were 00?
2 years. So stay in your lane. You get in my way, I will put a bullet in your knee. The one that works.
Right, so on to our review of James Bond's No Time to Die. Okay, well, directed by Kari Joji Fukunaga. The synopsis is Bond has left active service and is enjoying a tranquil life in Jamaica. His peace is short-lived when his old friend Felix Leiter from the CIA turns up asking for help.
That's a very vague sort of plot thing, isn't it?
I'm not finished. Wait.
Okay.
It was just a long pause.
Okay. Pause for effect.
The mission to rescue a kidnapped scientist turns out to be far more treacherous than expected, landing Bond onto the trail of a mysterious villain armed with dangerous new technology.
I can't believe it's finally here, Chris. It's happening. Is it like almost 2 years? Yeah. Maybe?
I mean, you can kind of see why it was delayed as well, not just the box office numbers, but there's certain themes in it which could have been...
For sure. Biowarfare and... Yeah. Yes.
So...
Very palatable at certain times of the year.
What were your thoughts then, going in, coming out of it?
Ooh, good question. Well, obviously it's Daniel Craig's last Bond, so I kind of hoped he'll go out on a high, right?
Yeah.
I mean, I really enjoyed him as Bond. He's had some highs and lows, obviously. Some have been better than others.
Yes.
I did my ranking lately, actually, and I definitely put Casino Royale top. That's definitely been the best for me. Skyfall was great. This one I'd also put up top. Spoilers. But you've had some lows. Spectre wasn't great. Quantum of Solace has been...
Quantum of Solace.
That's very posh. Quantum of Solace was very disappointing, right? So it's been a bit hit and miss for me. So, as I said, I kind of wanted to get out on a high.
Yeah.
What about you?
Yeah, well, I wasn't really thinking about it being his last one or anything. I mean, he's had last ones before, hasn't he? Because he's always said, like, yeah. Not always said, but he's been, before he's been like, this is the last one I'm doing, right? Yeah. And then he's come back.
Money.
But yes, this was much more, like, it's his last one.
Yeah.
So yeah, I knew it was going to be Rami Malek, who I really love as an actor, and Daniel Craig again. So that's pretty much all I knew going in. I hadn't really thought about it too much.
Yeah.
So yeah, that's all I knew about it, really. And I was kind of happy just going in not knowing too much about it.
Yeah.
I didn't do too much research on it or anything. But yeah, coming out, wow, you know, I really loved it. Felt like a love letter to all the Bond kind of franchise, really.
Yeah.
And there's lots of little nods in it to things from previous films and stuff. Yeah, great story, great ending. Felt timely, fitting.
Exactly, I was about to say that, Howard. A very fitting Spawn song, really, wasn't it? And
yes.
Just very heartfelt, yeah. And very much in the vein of all the other Bonds, really. They just wrapped it up so nicely. And
indeed.
Yeah.
Indeed. Okay, let's talk about some characters and performances then. Daniel Craig.
Yes.
He's James Bond, isn't he? Very much I think a little bit older, perhaps, in this one. Like, intentionally trying to show him as a little bit of an older gentleman, this one, perhaps. Obviously, he was retired. He was coming back from retirement to kind of help out with a situation that's unfolding.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, what else can you say about it? You're great, really.
He's definitely changed Bond a lot, I think, since becoming Bond. He's definitely been a much more scrappier, more action, more gritty Bond, I would say. You know, in Casino Royale, when it first opened and he had his first kill, that was significantly different to any other sort of Bond I think we've ever seen.
Yeah, I would say that film probably did take the grittiness to
another level.
Higher level, because
for sure.
It really did kind of tone back all that old school kind of little gadgets things, and it really made it much more kind of real and gritty.
Mm. Well, it's interesting to see, obviously, different Bonds encapsulate different things. Mm. Roger Moore was obviously quite campy and fun and that kind of thing. Sean Connery was like about the gadgets and the suaveness and stuff. Yeah. And
I would say in this, he was a little bit, they went a little bit more back in that direction, but in a good way. It wasn't, didn't feel campy, but he had a couple of wise cracks.
Yes. Sort of dad jokes.
They brought back in some of the gadgets and things, which I really liked. So I felt like it was a better balance for me, a Bond than Casino Royale.
Yeah.
Because I think they went too far in the other direction than that, maybe.
They felt very much in the Ian Fleming sort of novel direction with that. Okay. He was much more sort of, not hardcore, but much more unlikable. And,
That makes a lot of sense, yeah.
Mm.
Cool.
But yeah, no, I think he was fantastic. As you said, I think he sort of bridged the gap very well between sort of old and new Bond. He was much more sort of vulnerable as well. And
yeah,
And that's why
a bit more likable.
Yeah, exactly. There was much more humanity to him, and he wasn't just this super spy. He could get hurt, and he had his heart broken, and yeah, you really related to it. And as you said, there was some great humour in there as well. And
yeah, Lea Seydoux as Madeline.
Yeah. So obviously she was introduced in Spectre.
Right.
Which I kind of forgotten about. I probably should have rewatched them beforehand. But she was definitely given a lot more things to do in this one, which is great. And their relationship felt much more earned and much more developed. And you did really root for both of them.
Yeah.
And yeah, I thought she was great.
Agree. Lashana Lynch.
Oh, I loved her. So good. Obviously, the new 007. She's very keen to please, isn't she? Obviously, one-ups him. She's like the new generation, right, of Bonds.
Yeah, I feel like she's trying to be a little bit difficult with him, though.
Sure.
I'm here now. You have to build this.
Yeah.
But he doesn't really rise to that too much, which I like. He kind of he seems to warm to her quite quickly. And it feels like a nice work. It feels like a nice way to pass the baton on for the designation 007, because it's like he seems to approve of it, which is what kind of allows you to approve of the switch, you know?
Yeah, but I loved her swagger as well.
Yeah,
she owned that one. She really did.
Good. Yeah, it feels good. Feels good. Ana de Armas as Paloma.
Oh, I loved her so much, but so criminally underused.
Yeah, yeah. I feel like they're setting her up for maybe a later one.
I hope so. I hope she gets like a spin-off or something. Yeah. She was so good. So likable, so charming.
Yeah, funny and so, skilled.
Yeah, high-kicking all over the shop. Oh, I loved her. She was really fantastic.
Great. Really great.
Mm-hmm.
So we'll mention the MI6 crew. So you got Ralph Fiennes as M.
Yeah.
Ben Whishaw as Q.
Oh, Paddington.
Naomi Harris as Moneypenny.
Yeah.
And Rory Kinnear as Tanner.
Yes. So
they're kind of like the core ones, weren't they?
Mm-hmm. What I really loved about these guys is they felt like an actual family, didn't
yeah,
they?
Yeah, they felt like friends. They felt like they'd known each other for a while, and they connected quite well with each other.
Yeah, and obviously...
And they liked Bond as well.
Yeah, and he's obviously been retired for 5 years.
Okay.
He's been out of their lives for a while. They've moved on with a new 007. But as soon as he comes back, they're like, oh, go on then, I'll help you sort of thing. And it was really nice to see more of their actual home lives as well. Because obviously you went into Q's house, and that was nice to see a bit more of them and their dynamic. I really appreciated it.
Lots of little touches like that really helped you feel like it was completing the series, you know.
Yeah.
Which I liked, because, yeah, it could have left a lot of stuff open and unexplored, but I felt like they really did.
They were just well-developed, weren't they? Which is what I really appreciated.
For sure. All right, so last one then. Let's talk about the villain, shall we?
Ooh,
Rami Malek.
I
know this is the thing you have the most to say about.
I
do. Because I read your review, or you read it to me.
Yeah.
So he played Lucifer Safin.
What a name. It says it all, really, doesn't it?
So I will say that I love Rami Malek as an actor.
I
think he's
Mr.
great.
Robot. He's
Mr. Robot.
Great.
Brilliant.
Mm-hmm.
So go on then.
Okay.
Tell me.
Right.
Give it to me.
It's always difficult with Bond villains, isn't it? Because obviously you got your favourites, and it's very sort of personal thing, I think, with the franchise. Blofeld was, let's just say, a bit of a disappointment and a little bit predictable. Whereas this, I just felt like he was really aloof. He didn't get much development at all. He was just sort of like a very quiet, suspicious sort of villain. And there just wasn't enough character development or enough motivation there to really explain it. And I just thought Rami Malek is such a good actor, as you said, and he just felt very underused. But what obviously he had off the scene and runtime, he was very, very good and very sort of composed and I don't really know how much to get, but the one thing that really did irk me, and I know this is probably a Bond thing, but it's 2021 and villains still have like facial disfigurements and scars and things. It's like, guys, stop it.
I know what you're saying, but at the same time, I did feel like this film was trying to bridge the gap between old and new, and was trying to have some of that kind of classic Bond villain vibes that usually involves some sort of disfigurement or something.
Get a cat or something like that. Don't have the scar thing. Like in Casino Royale, they had the scar over the eye with Mads Mikkelsen's character. Just stop it. But yeah, sorry, that's
personal view on it is that if we end up banning all disability and disfigurement and everything from villains and stuff, then we're going to end up with some really boring villains.
But why is there always villains that have...
Yeah, I mean, I know you can have it in
behind him.
You can have it in the heroes as well.
Yeah, do that. They're not perfect people, right, you know. Right, so, yeah, anyway, sorry.
I mean, for me, it just feels like a slippery slope. Like, imagine if we get to the point where villains can't murder people because some people are upset about it. Okay. Do you know what I mean? Like, right. that wouldn't really work. Mm. So,
okay, well, what did you think of the villain?
I thought it was good. Yeah, I think I know what you mean. Like, he was felt a little bit quiet and underdeveloped maybe, but I think that was his character. And you can understand the disfigurement, going back to the disfigurement thing.
Yeah.
It kind of told you the backstory of they all got poisoned, right, didn't they? So it makes sense from that perspective. It wasn't just a random facial disfigurement. It had some backstory at least. But yeah, I liked it. I thought it was good.
Cool.
Let's talk about the plot. Yes. So I mean they bring in some kind of nanobots. And some kind of interesting gene stuff going on, which felt a bit like kind of an old school Bond plot, which I liked.
It was very silly, wasn't it?
Yeah, but also not entirely unbelievable,
well,
I felt.
Yeah,
so
true,
it's kind of,
true.
Again, it was like that balancing act, and I think they did a good job there.
Yeah.
It felt big enough and crazy enough to be a Bond thing.
Yeah.
But at the same time, could that happen? Maybe.
Is this a global threat? It could be. Yeah.
So I liked that. Yeah, and I think it did that much better than the other films in the Craig era to balance that line, which I've already kind of mentioned.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Again, all the gadgets and everything weren't too campy. I think it added something like fun without being too
on the nose. Yeah.
On the nose and ridiculous.
Or on the eye.
Like, I feel like in Casino Royale, the best gadget they had was he had a defibrillator, didn't he? That was like the gadget.
That was really lacking. Yeah.
So I like that this has brought it back the other direction a bit.
Maybe if they had a pen. Just put a pen in there or something.
A watch, something.
Yeah. Like. Have a watch.
In this one, yeah, a watch. I don't know if he did it in Casino.
Okay, yeah.
Yes, so it ties up a lot of story threads, characters, organisations and stuff that we've met before.
Yes.
Which is quite nice.
Mm.
Just feels a bit more complete when you do that.
What I appreciated from this was, and I don't know whether it's happened before in any of the Bond tenures, between the actors, they had a very sort of overarching plot throughout the films, didn't they? Which was quite nice, and it felt very full circle and very satisfying, I thought, which is what I appreciated.
Good word, satisfying. Yeah, I feel like you kind of left a few clues throughout the movie as well as to what might happen at the end, so it doesn't feel like such a crazy thing when it happens.
Mm-hmm.
Trying not to spoil too much. But, the end feels like a real celebration of Bond, you know? It feels nice. It feels finished, complete. And
I had to take your doff my hat to you.
I shall doff my hat to you, yes. Sir. Yeah, good stuff. Visuals and soundtrack and stuff?
Oh, yeah.
This is soundtrack and score and stuff, I guess you want to talk about.
Yeah.
Go for it.
So Hans Zimmer. Hans! Everyone knows Hans Zimmer is such a legend. Sorry, got to put that out there.
Sure.
He gives 110% to every single score he does, and this is no different. It's fantastic. I've been listening to it all day when it came out on the Friday. And obviously some personal highlights. There's some really great ones. There's like Cuba Chase, which is, it very much harks back to like Inception with the chase in Inception, which is great. High Octane, good stuff. And yet there's some really great sort of sweeping, really kind of romantic tracks that were fantastic. And there's some recognisable themes in there and flourishes that you might recognise from other Bond films which is a really nice touch, I thought.
And you felt that was adding clues and stuff as well.
When I first heard that, I was like,
interesting.
So I'll be intrigued to see what everybody else feels about that. But yes, fantastic soundtrack.
I would need to listen to it.
You need to listen to at least Final Ascent. It's the last song, 7 minutes long.
Yeah.
Very good crescendo. I'm sure you'll be crying by the end of it.
I mean, but it was great. I really enjoyed the soundtrack and it was very epic.
Yeah.
And as we said, lots of nods to the older films. Mm-hmm. Very, very cool.
What did you think of the Billie Eilish song? Again, that's another big one.
I think it's quite subdued and a little different to what you might expect. But it works in the context of the film, I think. So I enjoy it. And I like the way it didn't... It kind of eased you into it as well. Like the whole visual, the whole intro thing, it happened quite gradually. And I don't know what I'm saying exactly, but it didn't just jump into the intro. It kind of...
Well, sometimes it can be quite like jarring, can't it? Whereas this, it felt natural. And,
felt natural. Felt,
yeah. Like a continuation of... Yeah.
Yes. Which was nice. I thought it was good. What did you think of it?
I'm not sure. I feel like it's a grower.
Okay. Okay.
I think I need to listen to it a bit more. But I don't know, from the Craig era, you can't beat You Know My Name, right? I don't know. That's the pedestal for me, and this is a bit maudlin. And but it just definitely fit with the film. I can appreciate that. Yes.
I mean, some of them had to grow on me as well. Like, I remember not particularly liking the Sam, what's his name one?
Sam Smith.
Yeah.
Writing's on the wall.
But I freaking love it. It's great.
Oh, okay. It's like... I definitely think they are growers. And the, obviously, Adele Skyfall is very good.
Very good.
But that could be quite class of modelling, couldn't it?
Okay, visuals.
Oh, yes. What did
I mean,
you think?
I just... Stunning locations, sets, costumes, stunts. Yes. There's no... like expense or creativity spared, really was.
And I'm glad they went out on a high and went completely out for it, didn't they?
Went for it. I mean, without it being too over the top or anything, it just looked great.
For sure. I mean, it was a very global location sheet, which is great.
Jumping around all over the place.
For sure. I mean, Jamaica looked fantastic.
Yeah. Into like London.
Yeah, obviously. Norway. I know Scotland did a lot of, they filmed a lot in the Cairngorms. In the obviously Scottish Highlands, which doubled for a lot of Norway, and you can see that, and obviously the bridges and that what's it called, the North Atlantic Road, that was pretty iconic. I like that chase, and some of the chases. We're going to talk about the opening one, right?
The opening chase. Okay, go for it.
With the bike, you know, when they're in Italy. Oh, I forgot to mention Italy.
Italy. Okay.
But yeah, that's good. For me, one of the most exhilarating chases I've ever seen. I don't know how they did it.
That like, the jump over the, up the stairs. There,
for sure. I literally went, is he going to be okay?
Yeah.
That was just phenomenal, wasn't it? And then we had the obviously classic DB5 Aston Martin with the guns doing like donuts and stuff. I was like, I've been waiting for this for so long. So good.
Yes. Okay.
And the gadgets, obviously, as well.
Go on then. Verdict. Come on.
Verdict. Sorry. I could talk about it for a while, couldn't I? I absolutely love this. For me, there was... I said there were some slight niggles, so it's not a full five stars from me, I'm afraid, or two thumbs up, but it's very nearly perfect, very nearly perfect. It's just a lovely culmination of good plotting and groundwork for such a great conclusion. It just felt, as I said, very satisfying, very heartfelt, and just lovely, really, wasn't it?
I would agree with all of that, yeah. I would agree with all of that. I will definitely be seeing again. Two thumbs up for me. So yeah, if you enjoy the Craig movies, then this will be no exception, and maybe you'll prefer it even to some of them. So
yeah,
would recommend.
I think for me, I'm going to go out there and say it's possibly one of my favourite Bond films.
Yeah,
of all, I might even say actually
it's my favourite.
Oh,
although that might be recency bias, but
yeah, maybe. I'm just trying to think of any other. Goldmember is a good one. Obviously, that's quite a classic, isn't it?
Classic ones, sure.
But yeah, this has a good bit of new and old, and it marries it together so well.
A really nice way, cool.
Would highly recommend.
Highly recommend.
It's been worth the wait.
Do it. I mean, everyone's probably seen it already, right?
Don't listen to us. Just go and watch it.
Again, because you've seen it, let's be honest. Cool. All right.
Thank you so much for listening to this episode. Really hope you enjoyed it. And Bond.
Bond.
So if you'd like to get into contact with us to tell us what your thoughts on Bond were, and if we were wrong on anything, probably me, I'm sorry if I got anything wrong with the Bond franchise. Mm. I don't think about doing that then, Chris.
Right, we're at We Have a Hot Pod on Instagram and Facebook. You can find us on Twitter, where Nicola is probably most active, at We Have a Hulk. And you can go read some of Nicola's wonderful news and reviews at wehaveahulk.co.uk. And we also have a shop there where you can buy a t-shirt or something if you fancy supporting us.
Mm-hmm. Cool. So, next episode, we're probably going to be talking about Dune, because we're seeing that this week, aren't we?
Ooh.
That's very exciting.
So we'll probably be like, it's like buses. Two episodes come along at
once. I know. It's crazy, isn't it? Yeah. Although I'm going to be very busy soon talking about doing the London Film Festival. So I'm sure I'm going to be talking about lots of things. Cool. Also, Halloween Kills. I'm very excited. No. Nope. Although I am a bit nervous because I'm going to see it in the evening and then I've got to come back from London to rugby. I'm going to be like, you might have to meet me from the train station.
Yeah, I was thinking I might come meet you at the train station. You don't know what's going on right now. It's a bit weird, isn't it? Like in society. Anyway,
getting a bit dark then. But yeah, I also seen One Night in Soho, as I've alluded to. Very excited. Also, Ron's Gone Wrong, which is the new animated film from 20th Century and Disney. So I'm super excited for that.
Mm, cool.
Mm.
Good.
So, look out for those coming soon.
Maybe.
Maybe. <We'll see. laughs> Yeah. So, once again, thank you so much for listening, and I hope to see you next time.
Bye. Bye.